Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Well, then I'll drop by afterwards and come up with all the wonderful memories I have.
This is nothing to joke about.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Oh, today's episode is Season 8, Episode 4, The Way We Weren't. And now your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Welcome to Back to Normal Week. Minis resume starting the 11th of this month. So thank you for bearing with us while we had holidays. Hope yours were wonderful. Now on to our C plot. The end of the wonderfulness. Donna loses her new boss's dog! Exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. So Donna shows up for her first day as this Miss Schulze's personal shopper slash personal assistant in a skirt. This is not a joke. Shorter than most of my shirts, and you can see it in the visual aids. I swear it is true. We get a nice big shot of Mrs. S's dog Goliath, so we know it'll be a plot point later if my title for this plot line did not already tip you. And she gives Donna a couple of clippings of things she wants Donna to buy for her in her capacity as a personal shopper. But before they can discuss further, she gets a call reminding her about an appointment for the dog. Goliath has to go to the vet. Donna offers to take him. So she brings him to the vet. I grudgingly have to admit that I'm impressed by how she MacGyvered a secure seating situation for Goliath in the car by claw clipping his collar to the seatbelt, which you can see in the visual aids, because I was like, oh, that's cute. That's a nice detail. Yeah,
that was pretty cute.
She's letting him out when Mrs. Schulze calls, and this incredibly contrived series of events occurs. Clip two.
Hold on. No, not you, Goliath. He what? No, you did not mention he hates the vet. But, oh boy, gotta go.
That's Goliath running
Goliath,
away.
Goliath, stop, wait, good dog, heel.
Okay, only on TV would Donna repeat the sentence Mrs. Schulze just said with vet in it that would spook Goliath is number one. Yeah. Number two, didn't Donna learn anything about dog ownership from Rocky 2? And number three, where is Rocky 2? Yeah. Just disappeared.
Yeah, right. We haven't been at the Martins in a while, but actually, no. Where was Rocky 2 when Dr. Martin came home from the hospital?
Great point. He probably could have used a little nice doggy to support him when he would just had a stroke. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, show. If it didn't remember Brandon's scholarship to grad school, I don't know why we think it would remember that. Anyway, and by the way, I don't. Donna goes to the Peach Pit After Dark to freak out at David about losing Goliath. He says she should tell Mrs. Schulze there was a mix-up at the vet. They're keeping Goliath overnight, and she'll have him back tomorrow. Now, we are all pet owners. As a dog owner who is, like, in love with my dogs, one more so than the other, and they know which is my fave, this explanation would not satisfy me.
Well, and what
they didn't
kind
keep
of
Gordon overnight
mix
when he got his fucking leg amputated.
Well, and they're not going to tell. They'll call the owner. They're not going to just be like, "Please tell
Hey, rando.
Like, yeah, please tell the actual owner that we confused your dog with another dog." No.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Donna doesn't even take issue with that part. Instead, wondering what she's supposed to do tomorrow when she doesn't have Goliath to return. And then, instead of looking for the fucking dog, she goes shopping. Suddenly, Val happens to be in the exact same store as Donna for a job interview, and somehow Donna is juggling three calls, a Mrs. Musgrave and a Mrs. Freeberg. Like, when did she find any other clients and set up this as a business? Whatever. She loses both calls, forgets what she was supposed to be buying for whom anyway, but Val to the rescue. Somehow she uses Redial to connect her with one of the people who is calling in, which is not how Redial works, and introduces herself as Donna's associate, reschedules their appointment. Thank you, Val, I guess. And we rejoin Donna as she's just finished telling David about going into the personal shopping slash assistant business with Val. David is incredulous and goes on and on about how untrustworthy Val is, like he wasn't just in business with her instead of with her himself 3 months ago. But they're also making lost posters for Goliath with, just as in season four, drawings of the dog. Also just his face. Also in black and white. I mean, I know she can't go to the owner for a photo of the dog, but still, like, this is not going to get you anything. These posters are terrible.
And doesn't David have a business to run? Didn't he just reopen?
Yeah, it's the middle of the day. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, she's very pessimistic about the likelihood of finding him, which I guess she should be, given how worthless these posters are. So Donna and David come back at 11 p.m., having had no luck finding Goliath. She wants to call Mrs. Schulze and confess, but given the hour, David thinks she's going to have to wait until the next day. So the next morning, Donna's bringing over the clothes, rehearsing her explanation. As she makes her way up the walk, and it is going to shock you to learn that Goliath comes trotting up as soon as she has knocked on the door. Well, that wasn't a waste of time at all. On to the B-plot. Steve is bad at being a sports agent. So Steve is still trying to become a sports agent and goes to see Charlotte practice. And as I already tweeted when I was prepping this episode, our friend and ex-Television Without Pity recapper Lauren Shotwell is an extra in this scene. You can see her in the visual aids. Charlotte jogs over to greet Steve and he starts selling her immediately. He's brought her tickets to the Chemical Brothers. Okay, you can't do that. Even I know that, and I know nothing about fucking sports. Like, she's a collegiate athlete. That's not okay.
Yeah, like, look, there's ways to get that done. This is not that way.
No. If he sticks with her after he graduates, she'll be glad she did. Or sorry, if she sticks with her after she graduates, she'll be glad she did. She should tell her friends, and he's going to groom her for 2 more years. I doubt he has that long an attention span. So then he goes to the teach fit, where Carly is apparently fitting in great, although maybe she stepped on a writer's toe because clip 3.
Ah, what's with the toothy grin?
Takes one to know one. Sorry.
Oh, the toothiest.
Seriously, though. I mean, not until Megan Draper was there a bigger set of teeth on television. Anyway.
It's true. Please tell me Steve the chomp sound drop is coming back to... is joining us on this podcast.
Thank you.
Shopping.
Steve says he's celebrating and asks if she wants to join him, but she suggests that he get Charlotte for that. Steve says Charlotte is not his girlfriend, and Carly says that's good since she's out of his league. Carly has also brushed up on her burns since the premiere, clip 4.
What do I have to do to get you to go out with me?
Be somebody else?
I mean, it's not great. But it's not bad.
Yep.
It is an improvement.
Grading on a curve here.
We are definitely doing that. So then Steve goes to the gym at CU where he meets a legendary sports agent named Mr. Selesky for a business talk accompanied by one-on-one. This dude exposits that Steve wants to join his agency and Steve confirms that he does because they're the best in the business. Mr. Selesky asks why they're number one, and Steve figures it's because they know they need to grow to be competitive, like into women's sports. Title IX is going to make this a smart play for the agency, and the WNBA is already doing well, and Steve has a beat on a future number one right now, Charlotte. This Selesky guy has seen her play. Steve claims that Charlotte is his in the bag and that he's talking to her teammates, too, and Selesky's going to do Steve a favor and be totally candid. He is only meeting with Steve because of Rush. He's done a lot of business with Rush. Again, how? What business is Rush in? I thought he was a movie producer. Like, why does he have anything to do with sports agents? Whatever.
I don't know.
Anyway, he returns the concert tickets to Steve and then
a little movie called Space Jam.
Okay, fair enough.
That's exactly right. How silly of us.
Dave solved it. He returns the concert tickets to Steve and then basically has to tell Steve the shit that I already said, even I know, and I don't know anything. Clip 5.
How'd you get these? I gave these to Charlotte.
No, you didn't. And if anyone so much as suspects that you did, you deny it till your face turns blue. Do you know what the penalty is for a college athlete who accepts gifts from alumni? Automatic suspension. Charlotte Campbell probably has a future, and you damn near ended it with those tickets. And the same thing goes for any other CU athlete you go near. You understand?
How did you get these tickets?
It's my job. For your father's sake, I'm giving you a life's lesson here, Steve. Don't put on the cowboy hat unless you got the cattle to prove it.
Don't put on the cowboy hat unless you have the cattle to prove it. Yes. Was that what he said?
Yes.
Is that a thing? Because that's the first time I've ever
heard it. Well, I mean, I've heard the expression all...
Yeah.
Yeah. All hat, no cattle. We're someone who acts like they know shit and don't.
It's been a while since my cowboy days.
Yes. Since your paniolo days, I think you mean. So
yeehaw.
Then Steve is meeting up with Rush to bitch about the dressing down he just got from Selesky, failing to see how he was actually doing Steve a favor. And Rush is basically like, you're a fuck up, so quit fucking up. Steve gets all wounded about how his current self isn't good enough for Rush. Guy, you almost ended a woman's professional basketball career because you didn't know what the fuck you were doing. Rush is not wrong. There, I said it.
You also almost killed a bunch of people throwing an illegal rave because you didn't know what you were doing. You never know what you're doing.
Mm-mm.
Rush's solution to this is, well, proceed.
Okay, so Rush denies that Steve isn't good enough for him. Lie. And says he thinks part of this is his own fault, too. He's been thinking maybe Steve needs a venture of his own so that Steve has no choice but to succeed. So what business is Rush going to set Steve up in? Oh, God. Clip 6.
Remember that little newspaper that I own?
That Beverly Hills gossip rag?
Well, not anymore. I fired the incompetents I had running it. It's defunct now. It's a bare-bones operation.
What do I know about running a newspaper?
Well, I hope the hell a lot more than those idiots I fired did.
Okay, why would he? Why would he know more than people who have done the job?
I am actually shocked that Rush does not say in so many words, get Brandon to run it, after Rush basically thanked Brandon for carrying Steve on his back for the last 7 years in the graduation episode.
Mm-hmm.
Explain this to me. Rush cuts Steve off because he's an aggressive trifler. A claim for which there is so much evidence as to overwhelm even us. Then you decide that what he needs is his own business. Because that's
handed to him.
Trifle.
Yeah.
Which he has no background in. No interest in, and you've just fired literally everyone who could help him?
Yes, there's no institutional knowledge at this product at all. All of them are gone.
Okay, just clarifying that this Moebius of rational thinking was actually occurring. And now we can move on.
Yeah, right. No, Steve, this is a fail son story before fail son was an expression. Like, Steve is the ultimate fail son. Like, none of that matters. He's going to continue getting opportunities because he's rich and white. Like, that's how it works. Yep. Rush is ready to bring him up to the office right now, but we don't get to see that. Instead, when we next see Steve, he's bringing Brandon up, and I hope the wardrobe person who put Brandon in yellow and Steve in red so that they look like mustard and ketchup did not last past this episode, seen in the visual aids.
I didn't even notice that.
I mean, Brandon doesn't just look like mustard. He looks like the old, like before there were squeeze bottles, the little jars of French's mustard, because he's short.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brandon is denigrating the paper.
Pardon me. Have you any Bray Poupon? I retire. Goodbye.
Oh my God, please remember that when you're doing the visual aids. Okay. There is a picture. Brandon is denigrating the paper, which is called the Beverly Hills Shopper, but Steve urges him not to think about what it was. That's dead. Steve says, and I quote, we can reinvent it. And Brandon says, clip 7.
What do you mean we, white man?
What the fuck with the racist dad jokes? It's not 1952. Yeah.
I know. It's not okay to say that's a Lone Ranger line because it probably wasn't even. It's probably like the play it again, Sam, of Lone Ranger lines they gave Tonto. I don't know. Anyway, Steve will be the publisher. Brandon will be the editor-in-chief, and they'll split everything 50-50. We're supposed to think this place is a dump, but startups will, before long, pay designers a lot of money to give their offices this retro rustic look. You can see it in the visual aids, but it's cute. Like, it's got a fireplace. It's got these old like wooden beams. It's not a dump.
And they left all the equipment. So what could go wrong?
Ugh. Well, I'll get to that in a sec. Brandon takes a quick scan and turns to leave. Steve closes the door and keeps selling him, insisting that it's filled with opportunity. Here's how much Steve doesn't know what he's talking about. Clip 8.
Brandon, come on! We could really make something out of this newspaper. It'll be our own newspaper. An underground newspaper. We could make a fortune.
Yeah, what we all know about underground papers is how much money they make.
Yeah.
Brandon whines that there's nothing there, which is not true. I count 14 reams of copy paper, which, by the way, the staffers that Rush fired would have 100% stolen.
Oh, yeah. Along with the fancy laser printer. Granted, it weighed 200 pounds back then, but they'd have taken it. Trust.
Totally. There's probably an elevator. Brandon starts listing all the personnel and equipment that they'll need, which they won't be able to afford without a budget. Steve, however, thinks they'll be fine because Brandon is a genius, and I guess he can just do this all himself, according to Steve. Steve says the shopper still has $60,000 in accounts receivable. I doubt it, but that's supposed to be their runway to get the paper started. Steve repeats that the paper could be a cash cow, which even in 1997, again, I really doubt, but Brandon can't do it. And then they're at some bar later on their way to the can. Brandon lets Steve know he's made a decision, but of course, in the most obnoxious and condescending way possible. Clip 9.
So what are we going to call this little rag of ours?
We? Ours?
Yeah. I've been giving it some thought and, you know, a little paint, a little imagination.
Are you serious?
Nevermore.
Really? You'll do this? You are serious?
Conditions.
Okay, let's hear them.
Not many. You handle all the business. I get full editorial authority. What I say goes in, goes in. What I say stays out, stays out. That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
That's all?
That's all.
Oh, boy. You drive a hard bargain, Brandon. Let me think about this.
Okay, deal. Deal. No massage parlor ads.
Brandon, where do you think all the money is?
We'll have to find the money somewhere else.
Oh, my God. Okay. What? First of all, LOL, good luck with that. Second, ads are the publisher's department. Like, stay out of it.
Yeah.
Whatever Steve needs to do to make you money, he should do it. Sorry. I mean,
third, the fact that you probably make terrible decisions
is why
accent.
Steve should not be your publisher.
Yeah. Awful.
Mm-hmm. Really stupid. On to our A plot. Things still aren't great for Kelly and Brandon, and now Noah is involved. I have in my notes like 50 LOLs, but remember how Kelly had amnesia?
Oh.
We rejoin her. She's making herself a cheat sheet of facts about what she may never learn has always been her favorite subject, Kelly Taylor. It includes her name and age and the members of her family and ends on, and you are Brandon Walsh, but not who he is to her, which is hilarious. To help her remember, he's brought her their ring. She was wearing it when she was shot. And she has another cue in clip 10.
Were we engaged?
Yes and no.
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 You weren't.
No.
She turned you down.
Yeah. And then she went and bought the ring because she's a narcissist. Anyway.
And then he has to tell us that story because we didn't have to suffer through it once already.
I know. For all the people that are new in season 8,
and he does it
4.
In his customary halting, sometimes baby voice that says that he's being emotional. Awful. Awful. Unacceptable.
It's awful. Yeah. Anyway, she's sorry she can't remember. He says he understands, but it doesn't really sound like he does. Enter Noah, who, according to Brandon, is kind of Kelly's blood brother. Let's not relitigate the blood situation again.
Universal recipient.
And Noah shrugs off her thanks. And in the hall, Jackie is venting at Dr. Daniel Day Kim. Physically, Kelly is doing great, but mentally, she's not where the doctor would like her to be. Well, sure, in that she's lost her memory.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Daniel Day Kim. Welcome to the show.
Just thank your lucky stars you're not treating Donna. Jackie blames herself for clenching up about it, basically. Dr. Daniel Day Kim doesn't seem that concerned and has a plan to stimulate her brain, although there are never any guarantees with this stuff. He advises surrounding her with familiar faces and things she loves that might trigger memories. Jackie thinks it's strange what Kelly remembers, like no big life events, and it breaks both their hearts that Kelly doesn't remember Brandon. Whatever. So Brandon has a meeting at the house to catch up Valerie, Steve, and David about Kelly's condition and repeats the doctor's recommendation of memory triggers. And they've just broken up when Brandon gets a call from a Mr. Gerbecki at a newspaper in Seattle. Something about the Metro desk, apparently a straight up offer. But as Brandon responds with details on his current situation in the telling, it sounds like an extremely ballsy lie. Clip 11.
I can't really start that quickly. You see, I got a little problem here. My girlfriend was shot in a drive-by shooting, and no, she's going to be fine. Listen, do you think you could do me a favor and maybe hold the job open for a week? You could. You know what? That would be fantastic. I will let you know within the week.
My girlfriend got shot. Like, he says it like his transmission went out. He's
yeah.
So bad.
And then he's like, oh no, she'll be fine.
God. Yeah. So cool. Now the recovery of Kelly's memory is on the clock. She's got a week. Lord. And then Noah's back at the hospital with flowers for Kelly and grabbing her tray from an orderly to flirtatiously bring it in. She baby voices her greeting. So already this is going off the rails because she's instinctively flirting back. She thinks that she feels better, but she's ready to go home, and he tells her to eat. She needs to get her strength back. After arranging the wildflowers and weeds he's brought, he says he also brought some music, a variety, since he doesn't know what she liked. She doesn't even know what kind of music she liked, she notes. He doesn't think it's a big deal. She'll listen to it, and it'll come back to her. He has to go, but it'll come back later and stay longer. She asks him to bring Winston and then says her mom will know. Hey, maybe ask your mom then. Like, why send this perfect stranger on a mission to your mother's house? Like, she doesn't want to see him. Anyway.
Well, and just say that it's a teddy bear. Who cares?
Right. Dumb. Anyway, later as we rejoin Kelly and Brandon as she is telling him not to consider giving up the Seattle job offer on her account. He says it wouldn't be. It would be on their account. He knows she doesn't remember anything right now, but when she does, he doesn't want to be 1,000 miles away. She just wants to look at the rest of the pictures, so he walks her through, starting with one that Donna took in Hawaii, and he's like, this is us, and she goes, you and me, like, she knows what he looks like because he's sitting next to her, and presumably she's looked at a mirror recently, but whatever.
I kept thinking throughout this whole storyline that they sort of accidentally got something right, maybe. Which is that, like, yeah. After, like, often amnesia is, like, to shield you from traumatic events. So, like, you right. never remember, like, the actual impact of a car crash or, like, that's mm-hmm. that's a pretty common thing. So yeah. She remembers that she doesn't remember anything about Brandon. So it's just, like, dropped a dome over the entire trauma that was fucking him repeatedly over the course of several years. The human body is so amazing, you guys.
Oh, my God. She then identifies Donna and David, Steve and Val. And these are apparently all pictures from Hawaii, which she doesn't remember at all. She barely remembers today. Enter Detective ? Because I don't think we ever got his name, and I missed it in the last episode because it was so fucking boring. Anyway, he hopes Kelly gets out soon because they could use her ID to put her shooter away. Behind Brandon and his extreme concern eyebrows, Kelly says she thought Brandon already did. And the detective says that's true, but they have a problem. Uh-oh, clip 12.
How could there be a problem? I ID'd the guy from the lineup. He's the guy, no question.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, the lab results came back. No gunshot residue on his hands. So what we'd like you to do, Mr. Walsh, is come on back down to the station. Look at a few other pictures, and as soon as you're ready, young lady.
I'll be there.
Good.
Can you, just leave the pictures?
Because, you are a braying, aggressive asshole, and that's not what I need around me right now.
Like, I mean...
Jesus Christ, Brandon.
Granted, the fact that the guy has no gunshot residue on his hands is... not determinative in either direction. So I would probably bray at law enforcement also, like maybe look for some discarded gloves in the car, but
mm-hmm.
I also wouldn't talk to the police like that.
Yeah.
Or anyone.
Probably not.
Really?
Yeah. Or like excuse yourselves to the hallway because like Kelly's kind of going through some shit. Like this is not helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to stick up for her, but like, you know, she has a traumatic brain injury. Like, let's be sensitive. Anyway, apparently what Noah needed to do instead of join Kelly for breakfast was go to the Peach Pit after dark and help himself to a beer. He tells David to put it on his tab, and David goes from like you'll ever have a tab with me straight into business is still off. Stop taking business advice from Nat, idiot. Anyway, David thinks he needs to get some new bands in, and Noah, with little preamble, asks David to tell him about Val in clip 13.
I can tell you in one word, sex and money.
That's two.
Not where Valerie's concerned. Dude, if you don't have dough, forget it. Val's out for money, for stocks, bonds, property. She'll take cash, check, credit card. I came to squeezing every nickel out of this club. She knew what she was doing.
No, she didn't. And I hate this retcon. Like, Val as a character has always been super inconsistent, but this is just, like, shitty and boring to do to her.
I mean, she was money grubbing, but it was never, she wasn't a gold digger. Like, she was always trying to make her own money.
Yeah. It's not like anyway, she was lazy. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. And that didn't
like
seem...
Like, she got a chunk from Jonesy. Yeah. You know, that was part of it. Anyway, whatever. Noah has no response to that and suggests that he and David go band hunting. So Val actually does show up to see Kelly, bringing Kelly's yearbooks, which why would she have them? But Kelly says she knows she went to high school and college with all of them, but she feels like she's meeting them for the first time. Val corrects her about when they met and recaps what we already know and asks if she's starting to feel anything for Brandon. Kelly asks if she means is she starting to remember that they were in love, which she is not. And this gives Val the perfect opportunity to pounce in clip 14.
People are going to tell you things about your relationship with Brandon, but, you know, you shouldn't. Just don't believe everything you hear. I mean, you and Brandon were really close and you were very involved, but you had other involvements, too. I mean, that ring, it wasn't on your finger, was it?
No. It was like this.
Look, all I'm saying is just don't drive yourself crazy trying to remember something that may not have been there.
I mean, that is some next level cunting on the part of Valerie to be fucking with an amnesia patient. I am 100% here for it. Team Val.
Well, look, I mean, yes, totally. But at the same time, like, nothing that Val is saying is technically untrue.
Uh-huh.
They weren't engaged. She did have other entanglements. Like, all of that is the truth.
Yeah, it is.
Which is makes it even more brilliant, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Kelly has no response to that and instead asks why Noah isn't in any of the materials that she's been given. And Val says they just met in Hawaii. Kelly says it's weird, but she feels like Noah is the one she knows best and she wants to know everything about him. And Val starts getting alarmed by this and says that before Kelly gets too interested, she thinks Noah might be with someone. Kelly says Brandon said he was single and Val's like, I mean, I think you can do better. And Kelly is practically giddy as she asks Val to find out if he's seeing someone else. And what's the funniest thing about the scene, other than the next level cunting, TM Sarah debunting, is that it makes Jenny Garth be nice, like play Kelly as if she's nice to Val, which she hasn't been in like ever. And also once you know that Jenny Garth and Valor and Tiffany Amber Thiessen apparently hated each other, or at least that Garth hated Thiessen.
Right.
It's even more funny to me.
Ugh.
I'm not sure how reciprocal it was.
I also don't understand why Valerie doesn't just be like, oh no, we're seeing each other, hands off. Like, what's the harm?
I don't know either. Right. Anyway, then Noah shows up with Winston, which is Kelly's childhood teddy bear, and which we saw on her bed at the Walsh house in the season premiere, but we don't see how he got into the house or any indication that Brandon would be all territorial about it. Anyway, Kelly hugs the bear, and Noah asks if she has a hug for him, too. She asks if she knows him well enough to hug him, and he flirts that she knows him about as well as everybody else. True, but also gross. Again, don't fuck with a head injury patient. Doesn't matter. Kelly eats it up. She's glad to see someone else who can laugh about amnesia. He thinks most memories are overrated because he's
that guy.
Budget Dylan.
The douche. Budget Dylan.
He's Chinatown Dylan. Then Dr. Daniel Day Kim is at the door at Kelly's request. She says she's going stir crazy, but he can't let her out quite yet. He does say she can walk around the hospital all she wants. And Noah inserts himself to ask if she'd be allowed to go on a day trip off the grounds. Dr. Daniel Day Kim says it would be okay as long as someone's there, and Noah is happy to be her chaperone, and Kelly is so horny for Noah at this point.
Also, she had a colostomy. They told us mm-hmm. that. She's just going to walk around.
Did they? I missed that. Oh, yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Good luck.
Intestines. Sure. So Noah's brought Kelly for a walk on the beach, though when we rejoin them, he's saying they should go back soon, and she blahs about feeling both like she knows the beach and doesn't, if that makes sense. And then fucking Noah busts this shit out. Clip 15.
Ah. You ever hear the Danish philosopher Kierkegaard?
I love that he has to take a pause to check himself on the pronunciation.
Have you ever heard of the Danish philosopher Kierkegaard? He has no idea. This actor's never heard of the Danish philosopher.
Oh my God. As opposed to the Danish philosopher Bob McCord. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Or as opposed to the famed line dancer Kierkegaard. Like, shut up. Also, as if.
The Ace of Cakes.
Kelly's like,
Kierkegaard.
Don't.
Fuck. No, it's terrible, you guys.
Anyway, Kelly is like, don't remind me. And I thought it was a joke, but then she starts talking about studying Kierkegaard and sophomore philosophy, which I doubt that she did that too. She realizes she remembers her prof's name and what he looked like, and also remembers that she lives in a beach house not far from here, and that Donna has the room next to her, except then she also remembers that Brandon told her she lives with him. Noah tells her not to rush anything, but she's not sure she wants to remember. Not many people get a chance to have a whole new life. Noah, still misterioso, says he'd give anything for that. No one cares about your backstory, dude. Anyway. So Brandon is sitting in Kelly's hospital room, clutching her one-eyed teddy bear when Noah and Kelly return, giggling. Brandon is happy to see Kelly enjoying her day. JK, he's a bitch about it. Clip 16.
Where the hell have you two been?
Hey, B, what's up?
I've been sitting here for the last 2 hours. That's what's up.
We went to the beach.
The beach?
Yeah, it was great. I felt the sun on my face.
Hey, why don't I just leave you two to catch up? B, you want to grab a beer later? No, I don't think so. Okay, cool. Big day today, huh? You better get some rest. All right, I'll check with you tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you, Noah.
All right. Going to the beach, don't you think, that's maybe pushing things a little?
No, I don't. Brandon, when I was at the beach, I started to remember things. I could practically see the beach house. Donna, Claire, my room.
Well, that's great. Anything else?
Just little things.
And what about us?
No. I still can't remember. Sorry, Brandon.
I mean, that okay, cool exchange is like my favorite thing that has happened this week.
No, completely. Like because he's new, he doesn't realize like Brandon is the king of the gang. So he's like, all right, whatever. Like, does not care. It's the best. And also, the scene makes me like Kelly again, because even when she's like, sorry, Brandon, like, she's not sorry. She doesn't care either. It's great.
No, she doesn't remember who he is.
No.
And then there's that like, so do you remember anything about, like, mm-hmm. there's something on the wing. Fucking
all right.
Priest
so,
over here.
The next day, Brandon puts his thumbs in his back pockets and takes them to the marina to try to pick a fight with Noah, who is also not tall, but who is definitely taller than Brandon. Here is their dumb spat God. In clip 17.
Hey, B, nice morning, huh?
You say so.
Okay, let me guess. Kelly, right? What the hell were you thinking taking her to the beach?
Man, you don't want an explanation. You want a fight. You chill out and I'll come down and talk.
Let's talk right now.
All right, ew. You're entitled. She is your girlfriend.
I'm glad we agree on that.
Look, man, it was no secret rendezvous, okay? Didn't Kelly tell you? Her doctor thought it'd be good for her to get out. And it was.
And you just happened to be there.
I made a promise. I keep my promises.
Now, how many other things have you promised Kelly? Or Valerie, for that matter? No, why don't you do me a favor? Give me a list of the people you're not involved with. It'll be a lot shorter.
Look, whoever I see is none of your damn business.
It is when it comes to Kelly.
Look, man, it's not my style to get involved with something like you and Kelly. It never was. I'm treading too close. Give me the word, I'll back off. As far as I'm concerned, you and Kelly have always been meant to be together.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, what?
Just like, fight him. You'll kick his ass.
Honestly. And, you know, maybe give her the chance to decide, because it sounds like she already voted and she did not vote for Brandon. So
yeah,
there's that.
Who would? Because he's like, he's dog boy. Literally has a cube for a head.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny.
So then Noah and David are at some grubby bar scouting bands. And for some reason, Brandon and Steve are there also. Server recognizes Noah and starts to say what was happening when she saw him last, but he cuts her off because he is a man of mystery. He probably got a girl pregnant in Paris too, but Steve wants to know his story. And Noah says he went to Harvard. His parents are loaded and he works on boats to keep his head straight. David contrives a reason to leave Brandon and Noah alone to talk about Kelly. Noah reminds Brandon that when she gets her memory back, he'll be the one she doesn't remember. And Brandon is frustrated to be in limbo. He wants the job, but he wants Kelly more. Noah says they're not that different. Everything came easy. He didn't work that much. Just like Brandon. Which is true. Brandon is super duper lazy.
That's true.
Despite all of the like mythology around him and what a hard worker he is and whatever. Like remember him at the Blaze? Like he's a half asser. Anyway, Brandon's like, what are you saying? And Noah says, clip 18.
Carpe diem, man. It's Latin for seize the day.
No, it isn't. I don't want to be AB negative, but carpe diem.
Also, like, first of all, stop making this actor say non-English names and phrases. But also, yeah, we know what it means. Dead Poets Society came out at this point 8 years ago. Everyone knows what it means.
Also, don't make this actor say things that are in English. He's terrible at it. He's a sarcastic drawing of young Elvis.
So Noah found out the hard way that you only get one of each day, and when you lose it, it's gone forever. Noah doesn't want Brandon, a guy he's known for a week, to wake up one day and realize he's lost more days than he can count. Without Kelly, he's still Brandon. He can wait for Kelly, but he needs to pursue his passions while he does. He doesn't have to go to Seattle to write, and this is what makes Brandon decide to do the Beverly Hills Shopper revamp. Anyway, then after that, Brandon is showing up at the hospital, breezing past Rebecca De Mornay from Seinfeld, trying to tell him visiting hours were over forever ago. Kelly is sleeping, but she's wearing the chain with her ring on it, conveniently outside of her hospital gown. And Brandon wakes her up to say he misses her. Now, if this were me, this would be where I turned on him forever, whether I remembered him or not. Never wake someone up for your own selfish reasons. Nothing is more important than sleep. Nothing!
Especially not in the hospital, where trying to get more than 20 minutes in a row of sleep is fucking impossible because people in and out of your room all the time, sticking things in you and taking your temperature. Fuck off. Say it with flowers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow.
Yeah. During visiting
but
hours.
Kelly's an idiot. Seriously, that's why they are visiting hours. Whatever. Kelly is an idiot. And it's touched by this sentiment and gesture. And Brandon adds that he's not going to Seattle. He's staying in L.A. He just wanted to tell her that. Clip 19.
You get some sleep.
She was trying to, you fucking asshole.
Oh, my God.
Honestly, of all the horrible things Brandon has done, and he's done like 10,000 horrible things. This makes me the most furious of all of them. Like, don't wake up a girl. God.
Carpe noctem, man. It's Latin for seize the night. Well done, Dave.
Oh, I should have just ended it there. She half-heartedly says, thanks, Brandon. And then as soon as he's gone, she takes off the chain with a ring on it and drops it on her photo of shirtless Noah in her nightstand drawer, because now she hates Brandon because he woke her up in the middle of the night. And she's right. I hate him, too.
And that's the episode.
Yep. Who's your MVP?
That would be Danish inventor of the post-it note, Kierkegaard. I don't know. I think Noah, actually, because of OK Cool. He's like, so, like, this is Soup's Ock. Do you want to grab a beer? No. Okay, bye. And then he doesn't leave. He's like, all right, that's cool. And then he keeps talking to Kelly. That's also some next level cunting. Good job, buddy.
Amazing. I'm going to give it to Dr. Daniel Day Kim because A, he's hot, and B, I'm going to pretend that he allowed Noah to take Kelly to the beach deliberately to fuck with Brandon because he instantly started hating him too, and I support that.
Yeah, I'll co-sign that.
Okay, least valuable player. Brandon, who does not respect sleep?
Yeah, Brandon.
We have a user submitted challenge. At Corianne asks us to list five ways Deshaun would have improved this episode. Well, first, he could have been the one to tell Steve some shit about how collegiate sports works.
Mm-hmm. While wearing shorts. Not going to be mad about that.
Number two, he would have actually helped Donna look for the dog, probably.
Yes,
which David
and they would have had cute chemistry. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Deshaun would respect visiting hours.
Mm-hmm.
If Deshaun went down to the boat looking for a fight, he would get one and win it. It's just my feeling.
And if Brandon said, "What do you mean, we white man?" even as a dad joke, he would not have said anything else after that around his mouthful of chiclets.
I think that's five.
I think you're right.
Next time on Again With This, Kelly goes back to the beach apartment. The Beverly Beat is born. There's some babysitting stuff with Steve and Zach, and Donna saves some sweatshop workers. Because she's a dumb baby Christmas angel. Also not in compliance with child labor laws are our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this very podcast at AWT90210. I'm Latin for E to B, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Latin for shut the fuck up and let me sleep, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Our producer is noted guitarist Kierkegaard. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
That's edete apem, in case anyone wants to know what the actual Latin for E to B is.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.